Machlechaim.
The other day, had a Machlechaim, dude.
And now we can start. Machlechaim.
Yeah.
Chaim Lebracha.
Chaim Lebracha.
We should be connected to the Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the leader, the Alter Rebbe, and his Chassidus, and bring it more into the world. Chaim.
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 I was just listening to some of the stories about the Alter Rebbe's background, and it informs what we take from it. So a couple of things. The Alter Rebbe was Ben Acher Ben from the Maharal of Prague, seven generations. And his family had moved, over time, moved eastward through Europe because there was more and more modernization. And they wanted to stay more among those, like the Enlightenment was spreading, and wanted to stay more where the Firma Yidden were. And his great-grandfather was a very well, very, a great-grandfather was very rich and also a big Torah scholar, and had all his children went into the business except for one child, Shneur Zalman, that's Alter Rebbe's grandfather, Shneur Zalman, decided he wanted to come a Melamed, no money, just a Melamed. And he and his wife, Rochel, he was very anti-Kabbalah and very and also anti-teaching women. So he didn't realize who he married, though. This Rochel was a Melamedes. She had grown up outside of school her entire life, and she eventually, her father was so impressed with her, and her father was a secret chassid of Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, one of the second generation of Baal Shem, and she became this genius. In fact, the Alter Rebbe said that if everyone was like if all the men knew Shulchan Aruch like my Baba Rachel, I wouldn't have written the Shulchan Aruch. Wow. I wouldn't have had to write it. But he realized who he married, and he wanted to make a tenai with her not to teach the girls, because she was very, but she did in the end. At first she agreed, but then he did in the end. They were very, very poor. And they didn't have, they're not so healthy. They passed away, and they had two kids, and they were very young. The two kids were Bar Baruch and his sister, Dvarlea. They took it differently. Dvarlea promised that she's never leaving Vitebsk, where her parents were, and she was there every day davening at her parents' kvarm. And then their Baruch said, I'm leaving. And he went the opposite way. He became a wandering person. He was 14 years old. Wandering around, learning from everyone. He's seeing this development of the two different worlds, the world of the yeshivisha world and the world of the chassidim, the head and the heart. And over time, he started to put it together. He encountered this blacksmith who was like somebody who has been educated by someone who's educated from the Baal Shem Tov. And he had a great love for Torah, and he had several sons-in-laws that he had brought in. That's what you did in those times. If you get some money, you bring in Torah into your home. And he had three sons-in-laws, and two of them were great yeshivish. One was, or like some more yeshivish world, and some the chassidish world. And so Rabbi Baruch started to combine them, and he became a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov, but quietly. There was a fruit merchant who wanted to, who was very impressed with this young man. He tried to learn with him many times, but once he started asking particular questions, Baruch would kind of run away and disappear for a while. And then he would come back, and then, but really his goal was to get Baruch to marry his daughter, which eventually, Baruch said, I have to ask my mother and my aunt, who are these main influences in life. So what you did, you asked women about women, if you're going to marry somebody, and they said yes to the shidduch. Not my mother, my aunt, my sister, my aunt. His mother had passed away. And so and they got married, and he went many times to the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov at this time started to become very excited because he said that there's going to be a new neshama coming into the world. And this is apparently a thing. A new neshama doesn't just mean they never came into the world yet. It wasn't even included 100% inside of Adam Rishon. This neshama, and so it happens maybe every few thousand years, that a new neshama will come into the world. But he saw that it was going to come through Baruch, his chassid, the Baal Shem Tov's chassid, and he gave him very particular instructions.
Who was Baruch Mezhmish?
Baruch, no, it's not Baruch Mezhmish.
Father of the
Alter Rebbe.
Father of the Alter Rebbe was also a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov?
Yeah, he was a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov. Except the Baal Shem Tov asked him. He said, I never want you to mention my name. I don't want him to know anything about me. He has to find his way to me on his own. And so but it was a very special child, he knew, and he gave him a lot of instructions about how to keep up tznias, that he never even, almost hiding he had a child. And he gave him instructions like, when the child's born, like every single time he had to be wake up and nurse, his mother would wash her hands, Nagavash would wash his hands. He always wore yarmulke from time. And there was a special cloth, actually, that was used at the, I think at the bris, that was used by all the Rebbeim after that, that the Baal Shem Tov gave. So, but in general, as the date to giving birth to him came closer, the Baal Shem Tov got more and more excited. And every year on his birthday, the Baal Shem Tov was very serious. Chai Elul was Baal Shem Tov's birthday. And it became, at that time, it was getting closer and closer, of course, to Rosh Hashanah. 12 days left to Rosh Hashanah, 12 months for the year. Baal Shem Tov was very introspective and serious, and but this year was completely different. It was a Yom Tov. On Chayel, he davened for the Amud with the Yom Tov clothes and a Yom Tov niggin. And the whole lead up to Tishrei was exciting, and the Chassin didn't know what was going on. But he said that day, he said, today a Neshama was born in this world named Shner Zalman. He only told it to his Chavaya Kedisha, to his holy people. They didn't to tell anyone. And this is going to change the person's going to change the world.
They shared the same birthday?
Yeah, they shared the same birthday. And they saw very young the Alter Rebbe was a special child. At 2 years old, he had memorized Prokem of Tanakh. At 2 years old. And then Baruch pushed very hard that to be able to bring him to the Baal Shem Tov. He said no many times. But one time, finally, he succeeded to have him agree to have Upsharon and to cut his hair at his Upsharon. And he said only if you don't bring him publicly, his mother's, and they brought him quietly, his mother and his aunt brought him. And he waited till he was ready, brought him into the room, cut his hair, and went away, and no one ever saw him. And he said, who is this man? And they tried to evade the question. Eventually they said, Zayda. It's a Zayda. And from that, he always called the Baal Shem Tov Zayda. Because like, if you teach child, it's like you gave birth to him. But he didn't really, they never mentioned the Baal Shem Tov. And in fact, he moved, because of Ayin Hara, sensitivity, he moved from Lyozhna, where he was living, to the city of Lubavitch, which was like 5 miles away, maybe 3 miles away. So a little, he was a fruit merchant, and this child was growing up. And you could see he's a child genius from his childhood, into mathematics and geometry, astronomy. At 11 years old, there's a story about the parrots who had a sundial. And this sundial wasn't working a few hours a day. And somebody who was very interested, a scientist, was walking by, and the kids were talking about it. Shner Zalman was talking about this sundial. It says in the Gemara that in this angle, if there's a tree at that exact angle, and he knew about it, there was probably a tree miles, tens of miles away at some tree, top of a hill that was preventing the light. And they looked into it, and he became known in the community as like this Ilui. And the Jews and the Nazir were proud of this Ilui. He was put in the Chevra Kedisha, which was the way you at 12 years old, and they call him Rav Palag, Tano Palag. And at Bar Mitzvah, he gave a Kiddush HaChodesh explanation that everybody was completely lost, all the Rabbanim, the whole generation. He got a lot of offers for marriage at 14 years old. And at 14, it was the richest, of course, the rich person. The way it works like this: if you're rich, you get to bring in a Bach or Talmud Chacham into your home. And the richest of all, this wine merchant named Rabbi Segal, a $5,000 nadin, 5,000 ruble, which is like millions and millions of dollars.
So nothing changed.
It sets you up for your life. You would go and you give it to like business people around, and you would just manage it. And you'd be set up for a life of comfort, with these kinds of things. So he said yes. He agreed to it. I have to look into the shidduch on the condition that you don't tell me anything to do with what this money. He's 14 years old. What this money? I get completely the choice of what to do with it. And he made a tonight with his wife what he's going to do with it. The deal was we're giving the entire thing away to loans to poor people, to people who need loans for the parnasa. He grew up his entire life as poverty. He gave away the entire amount, and his in-laws were furious.
Oh, amazing. Nice.
And he was obsessed with tzedakah. In fact, before you can help, one of his principles: before you can help yidden beruchnis, you have to help them begashmias. And he had a tnai with his talmidim later that if you're going to come to me, you had to do the same thing. His first generation talmidim, he made a kita aleph, his first class. Over time, the Alter Rebbe got more and more permissive with who he would let in. because but the beginning, like a small tree, if you get it, he wanted it to be perfect. So these and over his life, more and more brought more chesed. But you couldn't come to me unless you agreed to do the same thing. These are the iluim of a generation. They would come to him and they would give away their entire. They said, try to negotiate half, a third. You had to give away the entire thing to loans. Now, yeah, that was your, you know, maybe you got it back, maybe you did. The Altreba never got his money back. And and this happened until he was like 19 years old. At 19, he decided he wants to leave home and wander. And because he wants to look for a way in Avodah. And he had to kind of choose choices in front of him.
Married or post-marriage?
After marriage, 5 years. He's already married 4 years. He married when he was 15 years old, right before his 15th birthday. And his brother also went with him, but Alter Rebbe got permission from his wife. He did not get permission from his wife. And all these things started happening. The horse died. Things started to change. And he asked his brother, did you get permission? He said, no. He said, go home. So he didn't go with him. You need permission from your wife.
From your wife.
He had two paths in front of him.
Why are you connect?
He could go to Vilna or he could go to Mizrich. Vilna, they said, you're going to learn how to learn. And Mizrich, learn how to daven. He says, learn. I know how to learn a little bit. I don't have any idea how to daven. Now, the Alter Rebbe knew all this. When he was called the Shalah Yid, because he took all the kavanas of the Shalah. He learned the Shalah Siddur, and he had all this while he daven. Said he didn't know how to daven. Once his grandson was playing, and he said, you told me. And he said, did you memorize everything you're supposed to do? Did you learn? He said, yeah. He said, did you... I needed to give my mind a rest. He said, when I was young, when I wanted to rest, I read the Shalah. That was what he...
Light reading.
But he said, I don't know how to daven. So at 19 years old, he went to Mizrich. And he said, he made a deal with himself. If all they know how to do is daven, not learn, I'm coming home. After 3 weeks, he decided to come home. He didn't see anything that was special in the learning. Except he forgot a handkerchief there. Apparently he was so poor, and this was a very special handkerchief. Later, he said in jail, he had everything he needed. He even had Big Day Shabbos. He used to put on this handkerchief. I don't know exactly what it was. Like Yaakov Avinu forgot the kelim. He decided to go back to Mizrich for a day travel backwards to get this handkerchief. All arranged. He comes back in, and the lady had brought a chicken to the Maggid of Mizrich, who was now, the Baal Shem Tov passed away. Right? He never met the Baal Shem Tov after he had his upshine. In his life. The Baal Shem Tov said, I don't want him to meet me. He has to be the chassid. I get Mesiris Nefesh so that he's not going to be my chassid. He's going to be the chassid of the Maggid. Because he needed to be that relationship. And he needed to find it himself. So he got back and the Maggid was, the lady brought a chicken and he was a kosher, not kosher. And there was a 4-hour pilpul between the different Talmidim and the Maggid. And he decided after that to stay. Because you saw the limbo that was there. So, at this first Yechidus, the Maggid gave him basically his mission in life. He asked him to bring the Chassidus of the Baal Shem Tov into a pneumistic way. Because there was a Chassidus is fire. And it's about like, and up until that point, it had been very emotional. The stuff would just wash over you. And if you had a connection with the Rebbe, great. And if you didn't, you couldn't really, it couldn't internalize it. And the Alter Rebbe's mission in life was supposed to be to make Chassidus internal. And he had to find his way exactly what that meant. But because he was a Litvak, because he was a very cognitive background, that's what his path was, to create something that was a philosophical, cognitive kind of Chassidus that you could take and make yours. So, let me take a break.
What?
You want to stop or continue?
Whatever you want, we're fine.
So who are you saying
is
more of a
lifter?
The
altar? He came from Maral.
When he
God was
what year is this?
Like 17.
1745, I think.
1745. Kohas was the year, and he. He lived 68 years old, Chaim. When he got back home after his first time he only went 3 or 4 times to the Maggid, 6 months at a stint probably in his life. When he got home, his in-laws were so upset with him, they tried to have him divorced. They told his wife to divorce him because it was a cult, you know, like a cult if you're going to join this thing. And
it was still not, Chassidus still wasn't accepted anymore.
Especially not. It was in fact, this was the height of the Snagdos. It was the earliest stages, and it was particularly exacerbated. There was some Chassidim,
Kalasker. What did Snagdim think of the Baal Shem?
I think that it was for sure.
How do you know that?
Yeah. It was all about the common yid. The common yid.
Pnei Yeshua sent the Magid. That's what it said.
There was in particular a strain of Chassidim called the Kalisker, and they were very wild.
Yeah,
it was very wild and self-defacing. They would do things that were just to drive the ego out of you. But in particular, they were also very educated. And once someone came to Vilna, he was clearly marked as a sage, as a because they would have a very structured thing. Whose house you'd stay at? Right. Did you get to speak in the big shul or not? And they marked him as this topper. They had no idea he was a chassid, a kalasker chassid. And they gave him the big speech, and he got up there and he gave a speech, and it was amazing. Everyone was knocked out, but over time it was disparaging, and he didn't realize it, and it was disparaging the Vilna Gaon, and it was created so much hate and dislike because you had and for them it created Pasha created a cherem. It was like it was one of the big influences that made a drive between Chassidim and the Livisha world. And the Alter Rebbe wouldn't even let that Rebbe come close after that to visit because of what his one in Chassidim did. Alter Rebbe spent most of his life trying to repair and trying to meet with the Vilna Gaon. By the way, the Vilna Gaon was called the Chassid. That was how he's known, and now we call him Vilna Gaon. It's called the Chassid. That was his nickname. And he had very many things were an exact match with Alter Rebbe and the way he looked at things. Even down to small Menhagim. Several times.
Isn't the Menhagim of Chabad similar to the Gaon?
I think on a lot of things, even little things like if you kick the kohen out of the room to give an aliyah, somebody else wouldn't allow it. Break up aliyahs into more aliyahs wouldn't allow it. That's some of the things the same in Hagim as Vilna Gaon. Used to learn a lot of Kabbalah, of course.
But Vilna Gaon wouldn't meet it.
And one time it got very close. Almost did, and he wanted to. And people around him influenced his mother to talk to him. His mother was very, very old. This was near the end of the Vilna Gaon's life. He was 20, 25 years old in the Alter Rebbe. And just to make sure that he didn't meet.
What was the fear? Mashiach would have come, that was the worry.
Yeah.
Is that really the worry?
If you get very invested in a fight, it's hard to break out of it, I think. I'm not talking about the villain. I'm talking about some lower people. But what was the fear? Of course, they thought they were, like, breaking up the natural order. You're coming after Shabbosai Tzvi. You're coming after the Enlightenment. You're coming after a lot of things that try to break up everything. And they messed it up. And it looks like something new. And then they used to say...
It's also the time period.
The time period.
Shortly after Shabbosai.
Right, that's true, right. Are you Kaplan writes about that?
Yeah, exactly. So, when he got back home, they tried to kick him out of the house, and they just ignored him. In fact, there was once a story that came home. It's a funny story. I don't see them have it. It's a Friday night, and they locked away all the food, and he couldn't make Kiddush, and he found only there was mashke. It was 96% mashke. And he made it on that. He almost died from it. And they found some kasha. Pasha saved his life. That's why we have a minik de kasha.
Really?
His wife found kasha lying around. From that. Yeah. But it was an uncomfortable thing. Eventually he went and he moved away and he moved back to Liozhne. And his father-in-law actually ended up going bankrupt and he passed away.
Oh, wow.
And his mother-in-law tried to bring him back, and it's a whole long story. He says, I'm not, you know, you don't. When a baby's taken care of and everything fine, they don't go back there. So, okay. But, maybe take a second break. What do you want to talk about?
All right, I just want to... Okay, Mordechai asked a question, but I'll share you just a little bit of an insight. This is a question of what's the whole idea of the Yahrzeit? And why is that even a thing and all this? So I happen to be people who are learning the Daf Yomi will see the idea that we just had a whole session dealing with the Yom HaMavis. The Yom HaMavis, that's a different thing. It's a different part of the topic, okay? But there's a lot of things that tie in. But anyway, it talks about how the tzaddikim, they're from day one, they're dying. In other words, their whole focus in life is how are they going to die, meaning that they worry about what are they doing with their life, that they're going to accomplish as much as they need to accomplish. And they're focused on that the day of death, and that's their goal, the end goal, basically. And therefore, even b'misasam the kruin chayim. On the other hand, the rishayim apil b'chayim kruin beisim, we can suk him to that effect. What that means is that to them, they never think about. That's what it says. Ba'meisim lo yodim uma. They don't know anything. They don't know. They don't even know that they're basically walking dead. They're living like zombies, doing nothing with their lives. They're nothing meaningful. They never think about that their existence in this world is limited. They're here for a purpose. They need to do something with their life. So that's what we say, that the Yom HaMisa is a great day. It's not a time that's a negative. It's a time of achieving the final time. See, about Reb Shimon Bar-Yochai, we just had this also in the Shari Zohar. Talk about this Dalkos of Reb Shimon Bar-Yochai, the recognition that all the Giluyim, all the revelations that happen on the day of death is because it's a culmination of a life well lived, that there's tremendous light that comes into this person's life at the very end, and that's something that can be felt all around. That's why Elisha was able to achieve double Elio, because he saw the Dalkos of Elio. So there's something very connected in the yard site, because that's the completion, that's the living of the life that keeps forward. And therefore, that's not only true on the actual Estalkos, but the day of Estalkos is also the tremendous ability of the others of that person who passed away on that day to grab into, to draw that into your own life. And that's the importance why a yard site is a big deal. It's interesting, I just reminded many years ago, my wife Zadie, with Zidon Buell, it was the day that his wife died. Many years, and they're both orphans, and they had a difficult childhood, and they got married, and they raised a mishpacha, the Kuara, and when she passed away, so my wife Zadie said, people think this is a very difficult day. No, it's a very great day. It's a special day. It's something that the culmination of a life well lived is not a sad thing, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing thing. That's the idea. Now, that's what I wanted to share with you about the concept, the principle behind yard site in general. I just want to make a short comment on. Okay, you missed it, Monty. I tried to explain.
Oh, I missed it. I'm sorry.
You missed it. Okay,
you listened to the recording.
Okay. I'll get the recording. I'll get the recording.
The Rufin commented that this is the most non-Chabad that he ever saw in his life, which is probably true. I just want to share my perspective on that. People, say, are you Chabad? Are you defining yourself? And my take on this thing in general is that. Like the Rambam used to say, Kabel ha'emes misha'aymer. It means accept the truth from whatever tells you the truth. And we live in a world nowadays that's very difficult. We live in probably the most crazy time. We're not suffering in monetary things. We live an easy life in that regard. But in that sense, it makes it a much more difficult time. We have a meaningless life. We have life that doesn't have meaning for us. What are we doing? Why am I here? All these very good questions that we need to think about, that we have too much time to think about without dealing with it. And that's why it's a difficult time to live in. And the truth is that there's what to be gained from all the tzaddikim, and everybody has to really take a chaparag, really, if you close yourself off from a tzaddik in general, in any area, any tzaddik, then you're losing out on something. And there's something that you really need for your own growth, for your own steiging, that you can gain from that tzaddik. And that's what you have to recognize. It's my belief anyway. You could take it or leave it, but that's really how I think about these things. In general, you know, there's so much to be learned from so many people. You call Malamda Iskalti, and as long as, and therefore, I'm not saying Chabad, not Chabad. The point is, there's a great tzaddik, and there's so many things that in his life, that my own life is enriched measurably, and that's what I would like to, that's what I'm really being makatoi by joining the Suda, to recognize his contribution in a very personal way to my own study. And that's the thing that I want to focus on. So I know that Danny is going to be focused on his life, you know, what it is, the story of his life. I'm going to talk about a few things that personally make, that I've learned from the Rebbe that changed my life and how I see things and how I behave with others. And those are things that I'd like to share and give over. So stop with that for now.
Okay. Chaim.
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 Should I continue or should I?
Yeah, sure.
And I'll kind of, I want to hit the highlights now. The Alter Rebbe was named Shneir Zalman. Shneir means two lights, because there's the light of the Nigla and Nister, the revealed part of the Torah. And the Alter Rebbe was chosen when he was 25 years old by the Magid to write a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch had until then you had Shulchan Aruch, and a lot of new stuff had happened. A lot of new application, and it had to be like, what do we do today on certain things? Number one. And number two is you had kind of a conflict between very brief and concise and then very thorough. And the Alter Rebbe struck the balance of like, it's clear for everyone, but it also has sources so you can go back and understand the reasons for things and do it. After the Magid passed away, Chassidus started to fall apart. You had his son wasn't really able to lead in the same way that he was, and it looked like it was going to be in big trouble. He had a great son, Avram the Malach, who he had made sure that it was Shneir Zalman's chavrusa. But even Avram Malach was he passed away very young, and he wasn't able to be a leader like that. He was a Malach. That's what they called him that. And so, it was, what they decided is that Hasidim would separate and decentralize. And you have all over, everyone will have their territory and develop in a way you could develop your own Hasidus. And the Alter Rebbe, but very few people were in Russia and East, because it was very difficult there. There was, you have a much wider area, so there's a lot of Isnagdus. And so over time, people left, and Alter Rebbe was like the only. What became like the for all of Russia. There's a few, you know what, I'll skip to kind of the couple things in his life is when he went to prison, and also Napoleon. One of the things that Alter Rebbe was very concerned about at the end of his life was Napoleon coming in. And this was a big disagreement between him and the other Rabbeim at the time, because people were very excited. Napoleon's going to be freedom. It's going to be good. And Alter Rebbe was worried that it would be terrible for Yidden Bruchnius, to the point where he even had a spy in Napoleon's army that was helping the Tsar. And for generations after that, the Tsar would call the family Schneerson was distinguished and treated with respect because of their help to the Russian army, and helping. And he pushed very hard that over time. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of freedom, but we weren't yet ready for it. And now, by having that freedom, it's very challenging, but it must be that we're ready for it, to able to deal with it and to do more internally. I told the story of shofar blowing before, right? Probably. There was the famous, right before the war, in this the famous battle between the Tsar and Napoleon. It was Rosh Hashanah. and different rabbeim were trying to get up earlier than each other to blow shofar. So whoever, because they understood whoever would blow, their side would win. And then Rabbi Yitzchak Berdichev, I think, he realized Alter Rebbe had actually blown shofar before davening. He said, the Litvak beat me. And to help the Tsar win, which is a very strange thing, that the Jews should continue to have difficulty with Gashmias so that their Ruchnias could be cocooned in shelter for another 20, 30, 50 years before the, you know, enlightenment and everything like that was brought in. In general, there are two things that the Alter Rebbe was, that Chassidus talks a lot about. One is Achdus Hashem, the unity of Hashem and everything. The other one is obviously Yisrael. And Alter Rebbe's purpose was that this stuff to be internalized and figure out how to do these things. Of course, it's obvious, but most of Chassidus is basically focused on either Achdus Hashem or Avos Yisrael, and that was the emphasis of this. Why don't you go? Tell us what you got from Alter Rebbe.
I'm sure you're going to touch on some of these things, so I'll just share with you. Obviously, to me, one of the key things in learning the Torah of the Alter Rebbe, and of course, get into the, you know, the magnum opus of the Sefer Tanya, Sefer Beinanim, and obviously the key element that I think is his goal to educate people is the principle of Hamoyach Shalat Alalev, that the mind rules over the heart. And to me, that's something that it should be obvious, but it's really not obvious. So many times we feel compelled to do things, and we feel forced by circumstances, by events, and by recognizing that there is no such thing as not having the capacity to control your emotion with your mind, that can change your life in so many ways. In my mind, my focus in life, what I've been doing for the past, I don't know how many years, I deal with conflicts with people, try to mediate in different circumstances. Everyone feels that they're compelled, they have no choice but to behave in a certain way. And if they would learn this Torah and internalize it, so then there never, I'd be out of business, okay? Not that I'm doing that for business, I'm just saying. I don't have to worry about these things.
But why come to you?
What?
No one will come to you.
Exactly. So many times the life is focused on what I want and what I feel I need and all these things. And the mind has the capacity to see things differently. And by seeing things differently, by seeing things from a different perspective, then that changes how you feel about it. And these things is not something that, again, and like I said, it's not the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe is not the only person who pointed that out. It's all the Bali Musar talk about completely having the mind having complete control of everything, but the way he says it, the way he delivers it, the way he gives that over, is something that can, if you internalize it and hear it from him, then it can really change your life. And it has changed mine. Okay, so that's number one. Let's wait. I'll give you, you go, I'll share a second, some other ideas that I do.
Wow.
Hi.
There's, I'll try to spend some time in jail. Twice. And
so there's
going to
be another.
The second.
He's getting
excited. We only stopped at one. What?
This was before he had connection with the Tsar.
Connection with the Tsar. Second time in jail. The Tsar came.
But why did the Tsar allow him to go to jail? Didn't he have
over time in the family, it was only recognized and solidified later over time. But he went to jail because, of course, people were against what he was doing.
It was a celebration for the first time. Which one?
First time. And the first time in jail, there's a story I just want to relate. Once one of the officials, he knew a lot of Torah, and he came to the Alter Rebbe in jail, and he said, I have a question. It says, when Adam was in the Garden of Eden, God says to him, where are you? And the Alter Rebbe started, he didn't, you know, he says, this guy was starting a conversation. He says, I know Rashi's answer. And this is like a guy. I know Rashi's answer. Give me that. So he looked at him and he says, when a person, 54 years old, and he knew exactly how old he was, says, has asked himself in life, Ayeka, where are you? Hashem every day is asking us, where are you? What are you doing with your life? And this was one of the stories of the Alter Rebbe was passed on to us.
Wow.
It was very much the style of Alter Rebbe, not to break things, but to work with them. In fact, to a point where his grandson had, he was once given a snuff box, silver snuff box. And he said, oh, the one limb in the body that's not designed for seeking pleasure, you're going to like teach it how to seek pleasure, like with this fancy snuff box and, you know, whatever. So he didn't, he ended up using the mirror, the thing as a tefillin mirror. And so somebody was telling the story 100 years, 50 years later, and he said, yeah, he broke it off. And he used, and the grandson, Tzemach Tzedek, said, my grandfather would never break it off. There was a pin he could remove gently. It's not his style to break things. Everything had to be done within the source of things and just to work with the world as opposed to drive over the world. And there was a lot of antagonism, even in Shemayim, to what he was doing. There was a story once where he was walking with the Maggid, and one of the other students saw a soggy piece of paper with Chassidus written on it, floating around, like on the floor. He says, this is what we're getting to. It's like, it used to be so special, and that, and now it's like, just, it's common. You're making it all common. And it was actually a reflection of what was going on in Shemayim that continued through the Alter Rebbe when he was in jail, and he saw it as a ruchnistik gzeir against him. But he said, he gave the famous mashal about a child who's sick. The king's child is sick. And the only thing that can cure him is you take the king's crown and it has a gem inside of it, and if you grind it up, then it can cure the son. But the doctor said, don't do it. There's no point because he's so far gone. It's not even, you're gonna ruin your kingdom and your whole representation of power. And what's the point? You're trying maybe force a few drops down. He said, my entire kingdom is for the son. Of course I'm gonna do it. And so grind it up, pour it, and maybe if a few drops make it into his throat, even if a lot of it spills on the ground, it's worth it. So this is what Chassidus was designed to do. This is our generation needs it. We need a few drops to make our way down into our throat.
Did you say his last name was Schneerson?
They became the family name after that because of Schneerson.
Became the family name after that?
Yeah.
What's the relationship to Nachman Mendelssohn?
Schneerson.
Just the same last name?
No, he's a descendant.
Oh, he's a descendant.
Yeah.
But it's not Ben Achman.
It's not Ben Achman.
The drops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When your spirit is yeah. sick,
that's the only time that they can make it all the way down. I think the
only had
girls. Feed the grave only had girls. Rabbi Rayatz.
That's like exactly what he's talking about.
So I just want to share, I mentioned this before, in our generation we need to get from wherever we can. So it just reminds me that I have a Mashulch that comes over. Chassid Shagai from Eretz Yisrael, he stays by my house. I call him the Rebbe of Melech because he always comes with his second, who's Zusha. We all know them. They come around. They enjoy a good meal. Yeah, they'll give you a pet. Yeah, those guys. Right.
Oh yeah. Okay, now I know. Now
I'm talking.
Rebbe of Melech. Say that.
I don't know, maybe not that, but something like
yes,
that.
Yes, it's from them. Yes, yeah. The Patrick. Right. Anyway.
What's their Patrick?
So whatever, they give out things as a little commands that they give out. Right? Yeah. That's it. Yeah,
no, that's not it. Somewhere.
Anyway. Kids are right. That's it. Exactly. Anyway, so people ask them always like, so what kind of cluster are you?
Right.
So he's always like a very evasive. Yeah, of course.
The two chubby one and the skinny one.
There's a bunch of two guys.
The funny guy.
The one
who wears the thing on
his
the sun that pops all the time?
No, that's not. That's a different guy.
Very smiling. Very joyful.
Rabbi Shachter.
Oh, it does.
Right. Anyway, so the two of them.
Yeah, Bernstein's the computer, right?
Yeah, what?
He like remembers everyone from it.
Yeah, yeah, from every city.
He knows their address.
Yeah, that's him. They're both geniuses. But anyway,
the bottom line. Like, I don't need to write anything down because
Whatever. One of them, anyway. Anyway, the bottom line is, they always come over to me, and people always ask him what type of chassid. So he doesn't really want to share with people that he's a hater samer chassid. So he. It's not always good for the donation.
Good for business.
For the donation. So he says, what do you mean? I'm a chassid of all the rebbeim. Okay, that's, and I think he means it. He says, all the tzaddikim, I'm what to live. Right, that's exactly it. See that?
Yeah. But he copied, he said it's a copy
from some
Some rebbe that does the same thing.
Right, anyway, so kids are maisa. So that's what we really need to be nowadays. You need to be grabbed from whichever angle that you can. So that's one point. I want to share with you another thing about Limud. One of my favorite stories. It's all stories, and from the stories you gain a lot. So one of the stories is that, and I can't say it over as well as others and all the details, but there was one person who was a little bit off, and he came to the Rebbe's house in the middle of the night, smack in the middle of the night, and he wanted to stay by the Rebbe, because whatever, and he was clearly a little mishuga, and he knocks on the door, loudly banging on the door, and the Rebbe is up learning, it's what he did. And he opened the door, and he's like, what do you want from me? Go, you know, get out of here, I need to deal with you. And he says, no, I insist, I'm coming in, I'm staying here, whatever. Like, he's like pushing himself in the door. So finally the Rebbe says, if you want me to call the guy? So then the man responds, he says, let me tell you something. My guy is bigger than your guy. Okay, right? And the recognition is that there is a reason that why Yidden can understand Goyim and Goyim can't understand Yidden. And that's because every Yid has a little guy inside of him. Some little, some bigger, not saying. Different levels. But not a guy has no Yid in him, so he just can't understand the Jew. And that's part of the problem. But the point being is, one of the key things is there's different mishalim, that the way they say it is recognizing who you are or what's part of you, what you're made up of, is such a crucial element in growth. Recognizing that you have an animal inside of you that desires things, that's pulling in one direction. The more you, if you're in denial, then you're not going to get anywhere. And that's one of the key things of that I've picked up from the Alter Rebbe, is recognizing, and that's what he goes through in the Tanya, one at a time, all the different things that pull us in all different directions, to understand where they're coming from, what their desire is, what that part of us, which it is a part of us. You can't, if you're in denial that part exists, then you miss the boat, and there's no hope for you, because then guess who is you? The you is that animal, and that's the problem. So you need to recognize that it's a part of you, but it's not the you. The mayach is the you. And that's the key thing, and that's another key element that I picked up.
One of the things Alter Rebbe said, once there was a chassid was very sick, he announced at the Maggid's table, that and the Maggid was in the other room, he said that doctor told him he doesn't have much long to live, et cetera, and wants to get a bracha. And he wanted everyone to say l'chaim, give him a bracha. They said the Rebbe's, they go in the other room, go to the Maggid. He said, I want to get from you. And the Alter Rebbe said, what a chassidish for bringing can uftun, malchum chol can't. What a chassidish for bringing can do, malchum chol can't do. Like the idea of 10 yidin, like we have, getting together to say l'chaim together, to eat together, to talk stories about the Alter Rebbe is itself a great schus, l'chaim.
L'chaim.
You know, one of his daughters gave her life for him. He had a daughter, Dvaraleya. Anyway,
so you come back even when there's not a.
Truly, there's upstairs became available. The inn is available for you. Come over here. You got used to the egg. Why don't you move here?
Yeah. You know the story about his daughter gave her life for him? it was in Shemayim he saw, and he was very stressed and depressed that it was going to be, he needed 30 years for his whole life path, and he only had 10 so far as a Rebbe. And he saw it was ending. And there was a kitrig, and he couldn't figure out a way out of it. And he confided in her, out of all people, because she was a very holy, special person. Her son was the Tzemach Tzadik, became the Rebbe. Her brother. So she got together secretly a based in of people who said, I want you to pronounce on me that it's going to be my life instead. And they were freaked out, and she somehow pressured them, and she did it. And within the year, she had passed away. And she said, on one condition, that you take care of my son like he's your son. And that became the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzadik.
These stories, like, Chalikas and Shemayim, that's coming from the Alter Rebbe?
Coming from, and I...
Him saying that he saw...
Through the Rebbeim, down through until the Rebbe Rayatz, who told over most of these stories. Yeah. One of the... Another story is when the Tzemach Tzedek was growing up in the house, he was learning downstairs in his grandfather's house, and this is the Alter Rebbe was very old at this time, and the baby, he had a baby, and the baby was crying. He had no idea. He couldn't even hear it. He was so engrossed in his learning. Tzemach Tzedek and his grandfather, huh? Mittler. Oh, about the Tzemach Tzedek. Mittler is about his child. Okay, shkayach. For sure, because it doesn't make sense otherwise. It's too much time. Okay, his son, Dober. By the way, he named his son Dober because the Maggid had told him, the same as the Maggid of Mizritch's name. The Maggid had told him, finally, he had already had two daughters, Freitke and Dorlea, and he didn't have any boys. And he was very, and the Rebbe said, I'll try before he passed away, he says, you're going to have a son. He gave him instruction to do a Shalom Zachar, which is the first time we did a lot of these things, Shalom Zachar, and the upshot how to do things. And he said, don't forget about me. He wanted to name him Nuna. Because of like the Rabbi Hamnuna was a secret, all the Kabbalah stuff like that. But he said, I know Dober because of the Maggid. How could I do the Maggid asked?
But that would have been so funny for me to have such a funky name.
Yeah, Hamnuna.
So
when Dober was a father for the first time, he's learning. Al-Jabba heard the baby crying, and he said he woke him out of his reverie of like learning Dober.
Was the Alter Rebbe son?
Yeah. That was when he was born. And he said, no matter how into your own spiritual, you can never not hear the cry of a baby.
Oh, interesting.
You can never let yourself not hear the cry of a baby.
No matter how high you are.
Yeah, and that became like a thing. Like, the world's crying, you know? You can be in your own world. You can do a lot of stuff. Go, babies are crying. Break out of it. Go do something.
Wow. Did you say why?
Why?
Why that's the case.
Who's in a different battle?
Why not? Why? I mean, you have to hear. A yid needs you. A baby.
The rabbi gives it over in a second. Remember the story. He says that it could be a Jewish child in Gashmir, like in age, or a Jewish child in knowledge. When you hear the cry of humanity, you stop everything you can. I mean, it's very apropos with Parsha, with Basia. If you think about it, when the Rebbe says that her hair got stretched, well, she was signed up on an ace. Why would she just converted? Why would you think that this happened? Because when you hear the cry of a Jewish child, you do everything you can, and Hashem makes the ace happen. You do your part. Get out of yourself and jump in.
Beautiful. Right, and that was Paul Vard of helping with Gashmir.
Is he really dedicated on the Gashmiya side? Yidden for 500 years or something had started to concentrate in urban areas for support and safety, but it was very bad for them financially, and they put them at the mercy of like, and so the Alter Rebbe was pushing to get Jews back into the traditional entrepreneurial Jewish businesses like forestry and fishing and innkeeping, and to get them out and be able to have normal lives instead of like these desperate, dismal lives inside the urban environments. And so that's what these loans were for, the 5,000 rubles. And all his chassidim, he spent his entire life. In fact, people used to have a koil in Israel, like the Vilna Gaon had a koil of Yidden. And people would do this. They have Yidden they would just pay for in Israel to learn. So there was something called koil chassidim. It was developed 250 years ago, whatever. Eventually became koil chabad. And anyone is chassidim. If they were to come to him in the first generation, he would make them give their to all these loans. To just he would tell you how much you had to give, if, and you wouldn't, and basically you would.
You don't
Yeah, you got. You had to, and you were basically getting up money so Jews could have a parnasa and develop their all these small entrepreneurial businesses.
Which would help the Kollel.
And then, they put also, first comes that, and then comes Torah and Chassidus after you have Gashmis.
Wow.
Yeah. Stay there. Anything else? Should we stop?
Was he sick before he passed away?
He was running from Napoleon. Yes, he was very weak. He was on the way running away from Napoleon because he was pushing further and further east while the Al-Tribe was moving more and more east. Because he went for the Tsar. In general, he hated Napoleon. He just wanted to see whatever he could. He gave a lot to see him come down. And on the way, it was too hard. That's why he's buried in Hadich. It was just some little place out on the way. Where Russian winter.
In Ukraine, where we were. But
in what?
Four and a half hours.
Other way.
Says they died in Piana and they buried him in Hadich a little bit away.
What?
Nearby Hadich.
They had to travel with it. There was all the distance.
He's in Hadich.
Does it have roads?
It's called Hadich, Harry, but it wasn't Hadich.
Does it have roads or it's like the Baal Shem Tov's road?
No, it's worse.
It's not even developed.
Those roads were rough.
Piana didn't have a proper Jewish cemetery. It was a real,
Have you been to Hadich ever?
Never been.
Do Hasidim go?
Yeah, of course.
Now they have
brother goes every year.
Well, we almost went.
Slaughterwitz, because it's 4 hours the other way. It would be 9 hours to get back by car.
It's like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you guys would have had a bus.
What's another 9 hours on the bus?
It's already on the bus.
We're not going for 100 hours.
Slaughterwitz goes every year.
What?
Yeah. Slaughterwitz is brother was every year.
Do the match.
Your test.
I'd rather not do the math. I think the only math I did was we slept a total of 8 hours.
I should have gone.
In a week. Right?
Next year we're going to go. We're going to go Chavdala, baby.
Well, that's where they went. Month the shot. That was the option.
No, that's Ukraine. Child.
From Russia or Ukraine?
Ukraine.
That was in Poland.
No.
He pushed for mikvahs to be warm.
He pushed for mikvahs to be warm?
Yeah, so people would like to go.
I'll
try about a couple of practical things. Mikvah should be warm. Shechita should be done with steel knives. And that was a lot of pressure against because it was a new innovation.
And today it's done with steel knives?
Everybody does it. Because it's better technology. And it was also the Nusach Harim.
What did they use originally?
Wood?
Iron, whatever.
No, iron.
Iron, but it was rougher.
It's not as good. You can't make it as sharp.
That was part of the big...
It's not just on that.
The Mishnagim, right?
Yeah.
Changing the way that they were doing Shlita.
Yeah, to make these innovations. He tried very hard to have debates. So he said, we need to prove ourselves. It's not up to them to accept us. We have to prove ourselves because we're the one who's trying to... We're shaking things up. And he went to have as many debates and public Torah debates so he could prove, that it was legit. He pushed very hard. At one point, all the Hasidim got together, all of his peers, and they wanted to make a Chayrim against. And he refused. A huge argument ensued, and he would not sign on it. And he actually got a klal against him from the other Hasidim on his family for not agreeing to have a Chayrim against the Litvisha. He would not do it. One of his kids or grandkids, whatever, had to run away, and it was becoming some trouble in the family because of this klal.
Wow. I have one more story I want to share.
Okay.
This story is not really Alter Rebbe so much, but there's another influence on Chaim Shul is sort of Nachman and Breslov. So I want to put a little bit together. There's an account where Rav Nachman met up with the Alter Rebbe, and that's an interesting story because they're very different paths in life. But this is after the Alter Rebbe was already in the jail and the issues that he had there. And Rav Nachman of Breslov said to him, listen, you got your Petersburg, I got my Fetter Baruch, okay? So it's almost a similar name. Fetter Baruch was Rav Baruch of Mezhbush, who was chasing after Rav Nachman and making his life very difficult.
I think he was also against the Chabachasim.
Right. So everyone, you know, like so what he was pointing out is that, and I just the idea is that everybody, especially when you're trying to accomplish something, there's going to be a lot of naysayers. It's just what it is, and Chabad has their share all along the way of people knocking them. And the truth is, life is like that. When we focus on our life, life is full of different difficulties that are happening to us from all different directions. And the question is, how you, like, what perspective do you take in focus on that? And you have to realize that these things don't happen in a vacuum; they happen for a reason. And I'll just share with you a Dvar Torah on that. The same thing, that conversation I had with my daughter not too long ago about how it's much harder to when you're a good person, somehow the expectation is so much greater and the pressure is so much more, and if you do well it's like, okay, no big deal, but if you stink up, so then everybody's all down on you and like terrible. It's like it's almost not fair for like what do you mean? I'm so much better than so many people. So I had to answer. It's my daughter asking the question.
That's a really, really smart daughter.
Yeah.
Very perceptive.
It's true.
So
she was basically trying to get away with things from her father.
True story. Okay. Anyway, the bottom line is that I said, you know something? That the Gemara talks about that a Kodesh Baruch is medaktik b'chichut v'sayir to the tzaddikim. The question is, what's the deal with that? Like, tzaddikim are doing, always only want to do the right thing. They make a mistake. Their mistake is not in their heart, not in their desire. Their desire is always only to do what the Ratzon Hashem is. They make sometimes a calculation error. They think a little bit wrong and whatever. And I don't know. They who knows what happens? Terrible, terrible things are happening to them. Like literally, they're suffering like tremendously. I mean, who suffered? I mean, who's as great as David HaMelech, who suffered so much? And the question is, like, what's up? That's because our Kodesh Baruch is Medak. So the answer is, that's the way it is. Like, is that an answer? So that's true. So what kind of answer is that? So I'll tell you an insight. I don't know if it helps all the way, but it's an insight. You have to realize what the goal of a tzaddik is, first of all. People think that a tzaddik is just, you know, the same goal as everybody else. It's actually not true at all. A tzaddik wants to, strives for perfection. If he wants to be, you have to realize, in his ratzon, he wants to improve in all areas. If there's even a slight area of where he messes up, if he's not hit hard on that, so then he won't be able to grow on that. And that's really what the life of a tzaddik is all about. So Hashem is not like, it's not like he's, you know, like, since you're a tzaddik, I'm going to be mean to you. No, you want me to give you what you need to improve. And when the stakes are higher and when you're that much greater, it's that much more meaningful and that much more difficult to improve. Because there's a difference. The difference between 90% and 80% is much harder to get closer above 90. It keeps getting harder and harder. To perfection, it's much, much harder to achieve that. So if you're not knocked down hard or hit hard, then you won't be able to grow that much, that little bit much more that you want to grow. And that's the reason, it's not a punishment. Chas v'shalom. Hashem loves the tzaddik. And the whole world is created. B'shvil chanina b'ni. But chanina b'ni, just had a daf yomi. Chanina b'ni, daila b'kav, all he needs is a little bit of buxer, and that's all he eats all week. Why is he? Zutayv v'zuschayv. The whole world is nizam b'shvil chanina b'ni. He gets nothing. What's going on? The answer is that, because what's best for his growth is this. And that's what you need to recognize, when we have all these difficulties in our own lives and something happened and there's redifus, everything that happens, you have to recognize that that's just the way of Hashem helping you along, goading you in the right direction to improve and become a better person and to really steig to higher level and higher levels.
My birthday is based on change. I take this message. Yeah. I have a question. There's a day in